Oh, hello. Good morning. I'm Mary. I suppose I haven't met some of you yet. I've been telling my story here for weeks now. Well, really, our story. As Joseph and I and the unborn child continued on our journey, we climbed the steep, long road to Jerusalem and passed through that city. All around us, men grumbled, as men tend to do. It wasn't really about the taxes or even the long journey to Bethlehem. It was the census. It was the counting of heads that the Jews feared and the Roman Empire. They whispered, someday, a king will rise up from Israel and spring out of the house of David. Meanwhile, I didn't want to tell Joseph that my pains had started. And finally, my donkey trotted into Bethlehem. His hooves clattered over the flagstones of the narrow streets, streets lined with caves hacked out of rock. Above the mangers where the oxen slept, some people had built rooms for guests and travelers. Joseph stopped at a house to ask for a room. But there were no rooms, nowhere. Meanwhile, my pains continued. We were desperate, but the world had changed. The natural generosity of people had dried up under the oppression of the Roman Empire. Why did I have to endure this? I mean, I was just a girl. I bit my lip to keep from crying out in pain. And I thought longingly of those mangers, dry and warm, where the bodies of the oxen would give off heat to keep us warm through the night. I wished that we could at least stay there. Finally, one landlord relented and said that we could sleep in his manger that night. I was so frightened. I wanted to change things. I wished I could make things different. I mean, I didn't need to be a mother. I needed my own mother. I wanted to go home again. I was afraid. But somehow, even though I was afraid, somehow I knew I wasn't alone. I remembered the promise given to me by the angel, the promise that held me, the promise that held Joseph through everything. Through the confusion, we held on to that promise. Through the ridicule, we held on to that promise. Through the lack, we held on to that promise. With no room for the night, we held on. We entered the stable. That night, I gave birth. Through me, I gave birth to a child, and through the promise given to me, I gave birth to the promise of God. The joy that filled my heart was greater than anything I had ever imagined. And that little precious being radiated a love so bright that I had never felt before. Joseph and the faces surrounding me were filled with awe. It was as if we were suspended on a beam of bright light-filled joy. Thank you.
So to shift things up a little bit, because this is how Christmas is, it's like all of it, right? It's the depth of feeling, right? It's sometimes heartbreak. It's sometimes a time of grieving. It's a time of great joy. And so we're going to go on that kind of journey this morning, starting with the Grinch Who Stole Christmas. Do you remember what happened when the Grinch tried to steal Christmas? We know the story well, most of us, I think. He took all the Christmas trees and the lights and the decorations. He took the toys and the presents. He took the makings of the Christmas feast. And still, the next morning, expecting to hear cries from down below in Whoville from all the Whos. What happened instead? When they awoke to their barren cupboards and their barren living rooms, not even a log in the fire, what did the Whos do? They went out into the town square like they always did, and they gathered in the joined hands like they always did, and they sang around the space that was now empty that used to have the big village Christmas tree. And the Grinch couldn't believe what he was hearing, more so what he was feeling. How could it be? He took every ribbon. He took every bow. He took everything. Do you remember his little hand coming down the chimney and he takes a crumb out of the mouth of a mouse? And still Christmas came. And still. There was the joy and the love and the connection and the gathering and the faith and the hope and the peace that is Christmas. The light and the love and the joy can never be taken away. And when the Grinch realized this, in that moment of awakening, what happened? His heart, we're told, grew 3 sizes that day. And when our hearts grow, when our hearts expand, then anything that comes our way that is a challenge or is painful is easier to hold. Because in that big, expanded heart of love, whatever comes along that's difficult is not so painful, not so intense. There's room. And that's what we do during Advent is we make room. We make space. That's what Mary is showing us. As her body grows, she's making room for the birth of this Christ consciousness, for the rebirth of love and light, for the bringing of joy. And we follow right along with her in the same pattern after that same process on our journey toward Christmas, toward this birth. Today's headlines say, there is no Christmas in Bethlehem. Christmas is canceled this year. Have you read that? Have you heard that? Yeah. But of course we know it's not possible. Yet it's true, the celebrations and the decorations are not there as they usually are. They've been laid aside to honor the somberness, to honor what's going on in Gaza next door. And it's true that the 3 million tourists are not pouring into Bethlehem that come each year. And yet the deep meaning of Christmas is laid bare there. And a profound hope and faith is still being cultivated in the local churches of Bethlehem this year. Elizabeth Monnier writes this in Christianity Today. She said, it's a cold December night. About 20 teens and 20-somethings are gathered in a circle at Emmanuel Evangelical Church in Bethlehem to hear the nativity story. They've heard it hundreds of times. They share the same birthplace as Jesus. The land and the circumstances are all too familiar. And yet here they are to hear the story again. Elias El-Najjar is telling the story. He's the youth ministry leader. He lived his own version of the journey to Bethlehem. In November of 2007, a militant group came in and threatened the Christians in the area, killed one of their fellow church members, and so he and his wife fled to Bethlehem. His wife was 9 months pregnant. They arrived in Bethlehem not knowing a single person, not knowing where to stay, not being sure how to find the place where she could have her baby. They had a piece of paper with some scribbled numbers on it with some health services in the area to find. And he was thinking about his own experience while he told these young people the Christmas story once again. And he shared it this way. He said, imagine Mary thinking, didn't God tell me I was to give birth to the King of Kings? Imagine them reaching this place where she would give birth. A big shock, right? The stench, the animals all around. The midst of all that, she delivers Jesus Christ, and they are filled with joy. Before that, he imagined Mary leaning against a wall, pregnant in her last hour. Imagine Bethlehem, he tells these young people. It's full. And it would be full like that if there wasn't a war in Gaza. He says, imagine that they didn't know where to stay just before this experience of joy. He says all of this, of course, in Arabic. And then he asks the kids, the young people, to think about the people in Gaza. And of course, they don't need much imagination because they see the videos every day, right? Children are being born and children are being killed. And this, he says, is the Christmas story. El-Najjar then says to them, all these small details that we don't usually pay attention to, he says, are the Christmas story. Because it's usually, we're all about the festivities and the lights and the decor. He said, but if you look at the real story of Christmas, he said, it's a story of pure hardship. And then he says, but God didn't leave Mary and Joseph, and they didn't leave God. And then he looks around the room and he said, why should we? Why should we? When things get tough, when things get hard for us, a lot of us want to go back to these traditional ideas that there should be some kind of savior or a superhero God that swoops in and saves the day for us, right? We all sort of long for that in those moments. But El-Najjar is teaching these young people something in the midst of this very difficult year in Bethlehem, and more so in Gaza. That the spirit of Christmas, the meaning of Christmas, the truth of Christmas cannot be taken away. In fact, it is sometimes when we strip away all the trimmings that we feel that laid bare truth. That the light and the love is always there. The faith, the devotion, that's what he's speaking to. This is what happens to us in hard times. It gets rekindled again. And even in the joy of Christmas, it gets rekindled in a different way, right? The warmth, the love, the connection, the gathering, the joy, the laughter. No matter what is going on in our lives, in other words, no matter what's going on in the world, like, you can't touch that is within us. That spirit, that knowing. I remember once standing in the home that was once St. Francis of Assisi's. It's now a kind of museum home. And I was standing, I didn't grow up Catholic, but I was kind of fascinated by the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And so there's a picture of a painting of him, and he's standing there, and it's like, you know, it's one of those images we, you know, in Unity we wouldn't be hanging up probably. You know, it's got the crown of thorns and the blood, and but then there's this heart and he's pointing at it. And I just stood there and felt and got it. Like he was saying, almost speaking through the painting, you can't touch this. No matter of pain or war or anything that breaks our hearts wide open, no matter of difficulty in our personal lives, whether it be in prosperity or relationship or health and wholeness or whatever it is that comes our way, you can't touch this. It out here cannot touch this. This light, this love, this devotion, it's untouchable. It's so big. And once we release it, once we allow it, once we open to it, we really get how very big it is. How very powerful the presence of the divine is that we carry with us. And that if we're brave enough, like Mary, we birth into the world. Jesus has this really profound statement in the Gospel of Thomas, the Gnostic Gospels. He says, if you bring forth that which is within you, it will save you. And if you don't bring that forth, that which is in you, it will destroy you. Not meaning the Christ will destroy you, but that it's so important, it's so essential to have the courage to open up to the big spirit that is within you, that wants to be unleashed, that just longs to be freed into the world through you and as you. And we get it, right? There are times when we really step into that, and there are times we forget, and that always seems to be the journey. And the call to remember, the call is to keep remembering that we too have a sacred heart within us. We too have a portal of love, of light, of all of this that comes forth through us. A womb, if you will, in all of us, male and female alike, that is ready to birth exactly what the world needs, exactly what we need. And so Mary persists. She says, even though I was afraid, I somehow knew that I wasn't alone because I remembered the promise that was given me. The promise was holding me, and it was holding Joseph. Have you ever received spiritual guidance and it felt like it held a promise of some kind in it? Maybe it wasn't blatant, but maybe it wasn't obvious, but there was a sense that if I do this, if I follow this, there is a knowing that it has joy in it, it has blessings in it, it has prosperity in it. Or maybe it's you've been around the spiritual journey long enough to know that that is the way it works. And that when you do say yes, when you do follow, even though it may seem counterintuitive or not quite right, or you're not sure, or there seems to be outer consequences that are difficult to accept in order to move forward in whatever way you feel like you keep being asked to move forward. And yet you do, because you know that there is a promise in it. A promise in it that is best for you, that is the greatest good for all. Sometimes we don't know why or what exactly we're being asked to do, or why we're exactly being led in a particular direction, but following it has a sense of it is the right thing to do right now. And I trust that in the end, it will be worth it. And that's the joy at the end of the birth. That's the joy at the end of the yes. And maybe even in the midst of it, if we can be fully present to what is here. Mary says everything, that through everything, through the confusion we held on to our promise, through the ridicule we held on to the promise, we held on to the promise through the sense of lack. And without a room, we kept holding to that promise. So what do we do when life challenges come our way? We lean in, right? Leaning into our faith. And that promise of love and light that protects us, that prospers us, and that brings us joy. In divine time, not always according to our time, important piece to remember. Lisa's crying up here in the front row. It's true. It's a little frustrating, isn't it? Mary's journey vacillates back and forth, it seems, between two perspectives. In one way, she's a scared young girl. And in another, she is a woman who is filled with faith and knowing and power. Do you ever feel like you do that? Like sometimes you're a wizened elder and other times you're a scared little kid. Or sometimes you're a wise child or a scared elder. You know, it goes both ways, right? What can we do, though, when we're not sure? When we're not sure what to do next? When we don't know? When we're in that place of unfamiliar territory? Because that's where the spiritual journey takes us over and over again. That's why it takes courage, because we don't know. That's why we get afraid. That's why we freeze up and we don't want to take the next step, because it's dark there. It's unknown there, right? But yet over and over we keep being asked, and it's almost as if every time we take a step, there's light at our feet once again. because we are carrying the light. We are casting the light from the divine essence within us, and every step will be illumined as we take it. And so holding to that, knowing that, gives us a little more courage to move ahead. So when we don't know what to do, we can just stop for a moment and breathe, right? Drop in, feel that presence and that assurance. And then connect with our higher self by doing that. And once we do, we just listen. Listen for the guidance. Listen for the divine ideas to come. Listen for what's next. And trust your intuition. Trust your knowing and act upon it. That's what Mary did, right? She has this divine idea all of a sudden. She says, wow, wouldn't it be nice to be in one of those mangers right now, lying down to, you know, I'm having these pains, I'm about to have this child, and we would at least be warmed by the animals around us. It's dry there. It's warm there. There's a place to lie down. And so it's through that guidance that they show up and at the door of the person, the innkeeper or the landlord, and ask. It's like when she was telling the story, I felt like she was they were traveling from Airbnb to Airbnb. So meanwhile, while all this is going on, the magi, the wise astrologers, are coming from the east, far away. But these are these wise ones, they're readers of the stars. They understand something about stars and the importance of stars, and they're intuitive. And that star over Bethlehem, that bright star, is a symbol of intuition. And that's what they're following, the pull, the intuition, the light that is taking them in that direction. And so they set out on their journey toward this pull, following the light. And that particular light could be thought of as Jesus' soul origin, that star, and maybe all of ours or some of ours, who knows? But that there was a light beam that is saying, I'm coming now to Earth from my place of origin, just like there was when you came. Scientists say we're made of stardust after all. So wherever it is that soul originates and comes to Earth, what a glorious, important decision has been made to do so. One day, your soul made that decision, and here you sit, embodied, with this huge spirit inside of you, this bright, shiny star of truth from where you come, pure light, pure love, and here to be an emissary of that, to be an opener to that. The wise men seem to somehow know these things, and so they came, traveling a long way to get there on camel. And even the humble shepherds felt the pull, felt the intuition, saw the light, and felt magnetized toward that light. They maybe didn't know why, but they were willing to leave their flock or bring some of them with them and come to the manger to see what was going on. And a feeling of anticipation, anticipatory joy is sort of stirring amongst all of these characters, amongst all of these who are being pulled into this scene. And it's kind of the same thing that happens in our lives. There's this anticipatory joy that happens when we gather together, and there's a sense of, as we pray, something gets lifted up. Or as we journey together, as we have a spiritual experience together, there's a sense of something important is happening here. When we come together in ritual, in ceremony, and especially when we come together when new birth is happening, when new life is coming to Earth. Have you ever either birthed a child, or witnessed the birth of a child, or celebrated the birth of a child, or held a newborn? Yeah, a lot of you are nodding your heads. And we know what an experience that is. We know what a pure blessing that is. I mean, that's a reason why we call it a bundle of joy, right? Because that's exactly what happens. This whole experience, you know, Mary goes in, she says, you know, we went in, as she continues her journey, and that night I gave birth as promised. I gave birth to a child. I gave birth to the promise of God. And the joy I felt in my heart, she said, was greater than anything I could have ever imagined. This little precious being radiated love like I had never felt. And Joseph and all the faces that surrounded me were filled with awe. It was as if we were all suspended in a light beam filled with joy. And those moments in our own lives are those moments of ushering in new life are like that. Receiving with joy that which is so precious and pure. I invite you to close your eyes for a minute if you haven't already gone back to one of those moments and just take yourself into one of those times when you have experienced a child and a new baby, or you birthed a baby, or you witnessed a birth. Bring yourself back to those moments of that child's arrival, of their early days on earth. What did you feel as you beheld this new life? And just connecting with that feeling, remembering what that was like, remembering the newness, maybe that sense of wide-eyed otherworldliness, the pure love, the innocence, the tenderness, whatever it is that comes to mind and heart. It's the story of Christmas. New life. Hope. The promise of what's yet to come. What will we become? What will this child become? What will I become? And even now, even in maybe a wizened elder state for some of us, even now, there is this opportunity to be reborn again, to bring forth a new aspect of our spirit and soul that has not yet been revealed. There's always an opportunity to grow, to rebirth, to bring forth on our journey. And even, I believe, beyond the time we shed our bodies. It just keeps on going because the becomingness, the idea of birth and rebirth, is essential to the spirit. To continue to evolve and to expand and to live and to be and to embody the light and the love and the joy. The birth of Jesus, of course, is not the end of the Christmas story. We know that well, right? It's a heralding of a great event, a new consciousness born on the earth. This is what the wise ones knew. A new consciousness is coming to earth, and I am not going to miss that event. Let's get our camels and go. And it's the same kind of excitement when we get connected to what is really happening. A new birth is happening in me. Yes, it's Christmas with all the traditions and the celebrations and all of that, so loving and wonderful. And yet, there's something deeper going on. And so we become aware of it and maybe willing to participate in it. I hope so. If you feel that stir within you, ask yourself, am I willing? Am I willing to bring forth that which wants to be brought forth in the world through me and as me? And if so, trusting that promise of goodness yet to come. Pressing on through the challenges that come your way and keep following the light of your intuition. Your commitment to following the guiding light leads to the fulfillment of the promise of Christmas. The promise of this ever unfolding Christ consciousness on earth. The world needs it, and the world needs you. And as you say yes to it, you too are blessed many times over. So this is what we're about this Christmas. This great joy is the rebirth of all that is in you that wants to come forth. So I want to affirm for us that we will indeed follow the light of our intuition to this rebirth. Let's say this together. I follow my intuition to the joy-filled rebirth of Christ in me. And so it is.